Shogun, James Clavell's number one international bestseller. Shogun, the Emmy Award-winning television masterpiece. The unforgettable epic of two warlords battling with destiny, creating a civilization for all time. The honor and the horror. The power and the passion. The beauty and the tragedy. Richard Chamberlain, Toshiro Mifune. A six-part epic presentation that is Shogun.
Hello and welcome to episode 82 of the Pure Tokyo Scope podcast. I am Patrick Macias, the author of the new book, Mondo Tokyo.
And I'm Matt Ault, the author of Pure Invention, How Japan Made the Modern World. 82. Sounds like the 80s, does it not?
We are in our 80s, Matt. We're well into our 80s now. It was 40 years ago today. Megaforce taught the band to play.
What came out in 82? Tron came out in 82.
Blade Runner, Megaforce. Did Beastmaster come out in 1982? It was a very good year, as they like to say.
It was. Anime-wise, I think we got, did we get like Gundam 2 or like Gundam 3? I can't remember. There was some animus.
I think My Youth in Arcadia was 82. Macross started playing on TV in 82.
Yes.
Govarian? When did Govarian come out?
That has to be around. God, if I knew that off the top of my head, just kill me. Just shoot me if I knew that. If I knew that off the top of my head, I don't, thank God. I have some standards than like Z-grade, Mazinger Z, reclone, reskins, whatever Govarian was. No offense, Master Gonagai. We love you. We love you to death. But you know, the most important thing about the 80s, scientists, anthropologists, and historians agree, is that in 1980, the miniseries Shogun came out. Isn't that correct?
It was a television event, Matt. And I guess at that time, I was about 7 years old. By granny, I watched the whole thing on TV. It might have been a little bit unsuitable for my age, but you have to remember that back then, I had already been through Roots in 1977. It was kind of like one of the first big epic miniseries on TV that really kind of pushed the boundaries of what was possible on network television. I actually rewatched Roots recently, and I'd forgot that Mike Brady owned slaves. I forgot that Commander Adama from Battlestar Galactica owned slaves, and they use a lot of words that white people aren't really supposed to use.
Oh, man. God, I haven't seen that in a long... Isn't the star of that Geordi LaForge from Star Trek The Next Generation?
LeVar Burton is in the first half, and then the older Kunta Kinte is played by John Amos of Good Times fame, the dad from Good Times, and lots of other things. Die Hard 2.
Putting aside the words that were... The words we're not allowed to say on television or anywhere else anymore, how did it hold up, actually?
Beautifully, really, really, really well. I was very impressed. And also with just not only the storytelling and the production values, which are like on par with like feature films. I mean, you looked at TV back then and it was always like so overlit. Everything looks like Different Strokes, All in the Family, but they're really going out on location and going for historical authenticity. And they were also really tying it in closely to the book by Alex Haley, Roots. And Shogun was definitely a result of this kind of like, let's adapt a historical epic for television. Let's take our time. I think the original Shogun ran 5 episodes, but 2 of them are 3 hours long. So there's about 7 or 8 episodes long. So there's a lot of story. They take their time. And they shot it all on location in Japan.
Oh, not Japantown, San Francisco?
And they shot it with the help of Toho Studios in Japan. So it has a very kind of very high quality glossy production value, which we'll kind of talk about later in comparison to the new one.
And the reason that we're talking about this is because a new, a reboot, like, or a retelling. It's not a reboot, but Shogun's back, baby. In 2024, a brand new production has come out that tells the same story as the book, but with obviously, thank God,
a lot of CG.
Actually, it's not too bad. The CG, we'll get to that. We'll get to that. But this episode, I really want to talk about Shogun because it's important on so many levels. It's interesting historical fiction. It's a huge Japan, US crossover. It's an entertainment crossover. It was a sensation. And I think it really did a huge job in the 80s. I was only, God. So the first miniseries came out in 1980. And I was all of, God, I must have been 6 or 7 years old. And I remember my parents watching it and not having much of an interest because the Shogun Warriors didn't appear in it. Or should I say the real Shogun Warriors appeared in it? Actual Shogun Warriors, but they weren't the Shogun Warriors I wanted to see.
Imagine you enter the world of the Shogun Warriors. They're on the move. There's Raideen with Delta Wing missiles, Dragoon with a star shooter, and Mazinga with a rocket launcher. The Shogun! Imagine you command them to defend freedom, protect justice, and challenge Edo. The Shoguns! They're ready to strike
when you are.
Shogun Warriors, Mazinga, Dragoon Raiden, equipped with their own gear, each sold separately from Mattel.
But, you know, on that note, actually, I think, you know, you wouldn't have the Shogun Warriors, I think, without Shogun, would you? Although I think the Shogun Warriors actually precede Shogun. Shogun Warriors started in like 78 or 9.
So James Clavell's novel Shogun came out in 1975 and really kind of put the word Shogun out there in the public consciousness. The novel was like a bestseller.
Well, I just remember seeing that book everywhere. Like everybody's family had it. My family had a copy. It was thick. It was like a grown-up book. You know, I was like 7 or 8 years old. And I actually didn't read it until much, much later. I must have been in college and I was kind of blown away. It's an amazing, amazing piece of historical fiction. James Clavell came by his Japan knowledge the old fashioned way in a Japanese prisoner of war camp during World War II. So he had ample experience to interact with people who certainly imagined themselves as samurai and shoguns, even if they weren't. It's interesting that that really, really brutal experience, which he used as the material to write his first book, which is called King Rat. Have you ever read that?
I have not read any James Clavell fiction, I have to say. It's been a bit of an oversight. But someday I want to read the original novel of Shogun. I really grew up watching and loving that miniseries. I bought the DVDs, I bought the Blu-rays. Like, I know it by like on the back of my hand.
The book is great. And it's actually based on a real kind of time period in Japanese history called the Sengoku Jidai, the Sengoku era, which you might know from, it was used also for GI Samurai, which is called Sengoku Jietai in Japan.
Are you talking about the era of the Warring States, Matt?
I am talking about the era of the Warring States. It was basically a 16th century thing. It's the 1500s where you had all of these local warlords vying for control, and the big names that you might have heard from Japanese history, Oda Nobunaga, you know, Toyotomi Hideyoshi, Ieyasu Tokugawa, all of these guys were rivals, friends sometimes, frenemies during that time period. And it's like just a hugely formative time for Japanese history. And it culminated with, there's all sorts of assassinations and intrigues and, like, you know, would-be shoguns dying without leaving an heir, and then who's going to take it over? And James Clavell mined that. And by the way, if you're interested in that, Hiroko and I wrote a lot about that period of history, because it's also that period of history that the ninja, the real life historical ninja, were active in our book, Ninja Attack, True Tales of Samurai Assassins and Outlaws, which Tuttle put out in 2011. And so it's a really fascinating period, and James Clavell did a really, really, really good job of digesting it and kind of remixing it into Shogun.
Yeah, I don't think many Americans had gotten their Japanese history lesson quite yet.
Yeah, no, I don't think so.
There was World War II, and then there was, yes, I guess, maybe like the samurai movies of like Akira Kurosawa, but those were more for like cineasts. Those were not like popular entertainment. So Shogun in 1980 and the book in 75, that's where we began to really learn as Americans about the roots of Japanese culture. And I think it wasn't like a necessarily something Clavell had intended, but I think it really influenced the way America looked at Japan as kind, sure, of this warrior nation of like someone who could write a haiku as well as cut your head off. And, you know, the Nadeshiko Japan, the kind of like idealized feminine beauty of Japanese women, all that was in Shogun. And there was this tendency, I think, for decades after to kind of look at Japan in terms of like, it was basically the era of the Warring States, but in modern garb. The economic warriors of Japan.
Well, it was around that same time that like Ezra Vogel published that book, Japan is Number One. Japan was really an economic tiger. It's rising up as a serious, serious rival to the United States, and Americans are starting to freak out about it, conveniently forgetting that the reason Japan was rising up as a economic power is because America had dumped so much money into it in the post-war era to make it like a factory for the manufacturing weapons for the Korean War and bases for the Korean War and the war in Vietnam. It was entirely a monster of our own making, but Americans had just completely forgotten that. And what they remembered was World War II, because when Shogun came out in 1980, you know, you got to figure, what's the age of the average recruit in the 1940s, like 18, 20 or something like that? So they're like in their late 50s. You know, they're still pretty much healthy, hale and hearty. And then this show comes out to sort of remind them of what bastards the Japanese were during World War II. So it's, but you know, that being said, where do you even begin with this? It's like Oriental specialist, but it's also done in this really beautiful style. Like you said, Toho's doing it. The kimono are amazing. The settings are amazing. The actors, it's Toshio Mifune. It's amazing.
It's not all Planet of the Apes with like a stranger in a strange land getting his ass kicked the whole time. No, I mean, like John Blackthorne goes through Japanese society from like high to low. And then along that process, I guess in the original version of the book, like, I mean, you learn about Japanese culture. It had an educational aspect to it that made it something more than just like a, you know, an adventure. And also the thing that really blew my mind and everyone's mind about the original miniseries is that Japanese people speak unsubtitled Japanese.
Yes.
And that was a deal, is like you experience the sense of being like a complete outsider as much as Blackthorne does. And you have to like learn along with him how to say hello, how to bow, how to say wakarimasen and all those kinds of things in those situations. And you also get to fall in love
with a beautiful geisha. No, it's true. It's true. There's a lot of cheesy things that didn't age well about the 1980 Shogun, but one of the things that's really, really cool, and I only realized it when I did a rewatch of it in anticipation of this episode of Pure Tokyo Scope, is that like they do the localization, translation, interpretation in a really interesting way, which is that they'll have a back and forth at the very beginning of the scene, and then they'll cut out the interpretation. They'll just have Toranaga, Mifune's character, speaking to Blackthorne, and they'll just be doing back and forth, one in Japanese, one in English, with like really little in the way of, if you've ever sat through simultaneous interpretation, let alone consecutive.
At an anime convention, when like Yoshiyuki Tomino's up on stage, like when you ask him, where is my next Gundam? And he smashes a model and says, here's your next Gundam.
Up against the side of your head, like that guy who smashed the ashtray against the woman's head in, Violent Cop, was it? You know, it's interesting you brought up Roots, because this was a time period in American history that was not very open to the viewpoints of non-white people. I think you could make a pretty strong argument for. And so Roots, you know, you're kind of telling the story of how African-Americans, how blacks came to the States, which is really, you know, fundamental, important stuff. And now you have this show where everybody's just speaking Japanese and they're like in period costumes. I don't think Americans could really wrap their brains around this.
But they did. And it was a huge hit. And the word Shogun became part of the lexicon. We had the Shogun Warriors. We had Shogun Assassin.
Shogun Sushi.
We had the Shogun of Harlem in The Last Dragon.
Shogun of Harlem.
Yes! And, you know, I'd forgotten how much of the original Shogun takes place in a steakhouse in North Alabama. Shogun means steakhouse in Japanese, doesn't it?
There's an entire episode to be done on like Shogun plus word in English that was a huge meme of the 80s for sure. So let's talk a little bit about the production of this. It's very 80s. Like there's a narrator, like a really heavy-handed narrator.
Are you talking about Orson Welles, Matt?
Actually, I think it's Unicron is his real name. Orson Welles was his persona that he used on Planet Earth, but he's actually Unicron. It's funny because we'll get to the 2024 Shogun. The 2024, in my modern times, narration is seen as kind of passé and old-fashioned. You don't see many shows or hear many shows that have narration in them anymore. So one of the most dated things about Shogun, it is the 14th century. It is the year 1598 of our Lord, you know, and it's like he's going on and on and on in this sort of like faux Shakespearean thing, but it actually sets the stage.
Then he starts going,
the French champagne has always been celebrated for its excellence.
We will serve no wine before its time. I mean, Orson Welles, the guy from the old wine commercials. That's the joke from Buckaroo Banzai. They're like, Orson Welles, you mean the guy from the wine commercials?
Is that actually in Buckaroo Banzai? I didn't remember
it is because the War of the Worlds broadcast was real, because that's when the Lectroids from Planet 10 came to Earth.
I remember that. I remember I lived through that. Thank you, Buckaroo. Thank you for saving us.
That was fake news, Matt. The whole War of the Worlds invasion thing was the original fake news. It really happened.
Yeah, the fake news is that they didn't come up with the teased sequel, Buckaroo Banzai versus the World Crime League. They teased that at the end of the movie and then it never came out. I'm very occult, Patrick.
I think before you die, you get to see Buckaroo Banzai against the World Crime League, and you get to see Remo Williams 2, which was also promised at the end of Remo Williams, The Adventure Begins.
Yeah, actually, no, I'm glad you brought that up. I'm glad you brought up Remo Williams, because this actually links back into Shogun, because in my childhood in the 70s, you could potentially do a show featuring Asian characters, but they all had to be white actors, which is how you get things like Kung Fu, where they they literally turned down Bruce Lee for the role and instead put David Carradine in. I mean, I love me some David Carradine Kung Fu, but like the idea that you would make a show, call it Kung Fu, and that like Bruce Lee is willing to do it. Like, you should be so lucky that your show is called Kung Fu and Bruce Lee is going to be in there. And then, oh man. And then, yeah, Remo Williams, which stars, what's his name?
Joel Grey from Cabaret as Chun, the Korean martial arts master.
God.
You're taking a role from someone. You're taking a role from like a capable actor.
Oh yeah, there's no Koreans out there who could have played a Korean. No way. We definitely need Joel Grey, a white guy, to do this.
But in Shogun, the original Shogun, it's an all Japanese cast. They filmed all in Japan. Basically a big advertisement for Japan, kind of a big warts and all advertisement in Japan, because some nasty stuff happens on your TV screen. I mean, you know, there's decapitations, Blackthorn gets peed on, you know, it's just some rough stuff. Someone gets boiled alive, spoilers. Yes. But yeah, and there are some very big names involved in the cast.
Like your favorite, Frankie Sakai?
Frankie Sakai from Mothra and The Last War. Yeah, plays Yabu.
And, you know, we've already touched on the fact that the Toshiro Mifune is in there.
But the thing is he was only available for a short time. So he's not actually in it very much. And it's like a big event when he does show up. I mean, I guess he was too busy like shooting whiskey commercials with Francis Ford Coppola for Suntory.
On the one hand, it kind of works because those high-ranking guys would not have come out that much. You know what I mean? They're like the kind of last people you meet before you get your head cut off or whatever it is. But one of the things I noticed about 1980 Shogun versus 2024 Shogun is that in the 1980 version, somehow, even though it's set in Japan, the Japanese people are kind of side stories to the drama that's going on with Blackthorn and all of the Jesuits and all of that stuff. Like every time the Japanese say something, it cuts back to this kind of pained reaction shot of Richard Chamberlain.
Yeah, you don't like John Rhys Davies, Matt? What's wrong?
It's well cast. It's well cast, but it's very much, even though it's set in Japan, it's very much the foreign people's show.
It's the Blackthorn show.
We'll talk about this a little bit more when we get to 2024 Shogun, but the 2024 Shogun, the foreign people are very much the side characters. It's like all Japanese people all the time. And it's like 1598 Osaka. I mean, there's like probably five foreign people in the entire country. That is really interesting where they're giving kind of like, you know, what's the word? The foreign gaze or the Japanese gaze? 1980s Shogun is very foreign gaze and 2024 is very Japanese gaze.
Do you want to get into the new one? Is it time? Are you ready, Matt, to switch the dial 40 years into the future and go to Shogun 2024?
What kind of man wields power in a land like this? Death is the only punishment here. I fought too long, too hard to get here.
Life and death are the same. Both can have value and purpose.
Only one is permanent. Tsujin, Yominus.
So it just started airing on
FX. It's showing on Disney Plus here in Japan, which is great because you can watch, like, I guess, like The Black Hole, and then you can watch the new Shogun, like, back to back.
Disney Shogun. And I had initially thought it was being run by the same people who ran Game of Thrones, but it's actually not. It's a husband and wife team. I don't know if they were involved with Game of Thrones or not, but it has a very Game of Thrones vibe to it. Like the theme song, Shogun. No, I'm just kidding. There's no words.
They must have pitched this. It's like, this is like Game of Thrones set in ancient Japan. I mean, yes. You can just see that elevator pitch. Like,
well, the opening animation, which is like a ship sailing over a Zen rock garden and with like the islands popping up, is very much like that kind of clockwork universe of the Game of Thrones opening. And it has that kind of casual violence and casual sex of Game of Thrones. So the thing is, a Game of Thrones is all, that's fake, Patrick, but this actually is rooted in some kind of history, which gives it like a little bit more power, I think, than Game of Thrones had. No offense if you're a our thronesy. Is that what they call you? My little throny? Is that what they call you?
So I got to come out and say, Matt, I am enjoying the new one. I'm a professional hater. You can monetize your hate for things like Star Wars. And I'm enjoying this. I'm kind of shocked at myself. I have nothing really negative to say. I mean, I do feel it's really interesting to see what they've done differently and how much things have changed since 1980 in terms of telling the story. It's both, to me, bigger and smaller than it was back in the old days.
Would you call yourself a shogi? Is that what a fan of this is?
As Chuck D says, impeach the president, pulling out my ray gun, zap the next one. I could be your shogun, Matt.
Oh, wow. I'd forgotten that. Chuck D is my shogun. He's one of them anyway. On a very serious note, because we get serious, Patrick.
Prestige television is very serious. We have to try to cash in on this whole shogun thing while it's still hot. That's pretty serious.
Well, prestige television is what passes for religion in the 21st century. So it is actually pretty important. No, all jokes, puns, jesting, joshing aside, I love it. I think it's absolutely amazing. And this actually kind of scares me for the show, because if I like something this much, it's appealing to something that probably doesn't appeal to the average American very much, because I'm very much not the average American in terms of tastes or anything else.
I don't know what the ratings are like, but so far the critics are raving, saying it's really great. So I think you're in good company, at least in terms of that whole Rotten Tomatoes audience critic score.
The ironic thing is that although it is arguably more, I don't know, realistically filmed, tastefully done, it's actually being filmed in Vancouver or something, not in Japan. The one thing that critics are pointing out is that when they're adventuring through forest, it's so obviously the Pacific Northwest and not Japan. But you know what? That's fine. You know, tax credits, there's all sorts of reasons to film there and all sorts of reasons not to film in Japan.
It's magic, you know, and I think the new one has a much, 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 much bigger sense of scale. I think, as you know, from filming Kagemusha, if you move the camera in Japan like 5 feet in one direction, there's going to be like telephone poles in a pachinko parlor. Like there's a very limited range of places that, especially now, 40 years later, where you can film giant epic. You need CG, you need it, but it brings in a touch of like artificiality to it. Like it has that kind of blue steely look to it. I feel like I'm playing Ghosts of Tsushima, that PlayStation game. That's fine. I mean, that they got to do what they got to do, but there's so much blue screen, there's so much British Columbia. I feel like the special effect now is just trying to make me feel like, you know, I'm in Japan, whereas before
they were in Japan. No, totally.
So it's a big difference.
Totally. Although that being said, I'm really grooving on how much detail and how much effort they put into rendering these like 1590s Osaka street scenes. Hiroko, my wife and partner in so many things, has been doing breakdowns of the costuming on Twitter. She's been pointing out just how totally period accurate they are. Like they don't feature, the kimono aren't modern, the obi aren't modern. Like there's very different styles, and you can actually just, when you freeze frame a street scene, you can tell that they actually built little stories into them. Like, oh, this person must be a very high-ranking person. Oh, this person must be a very low-ranking. Oh, these people must be travelers. Oh, probably this person's like a prostitute. Oh, this person must be a merchant, a wealthy merchant. And you can actually tell if you know they put that much thought, study, and effort into it. So that's really impressive to me, because 99% of the time when you have a show where even like even part of it is set in Japan, it gets this Western plastic fantastic thing going on. Like Westworld had this problem, even though it starred a lot of really heavy hitting actors, including Hiroyuki Sanada, who's the star of Shogun.
He's also the producer of Shogun. He's gone on interviews saying like authenticity, it had to represent Japanese culture. All those things had to be correct in order for him to even sign on.
But I think that's actually right there. That's key. So there's a lot of memoirs and articles and things have been written about the 1980s Shogun. And one of the big issues they had was that there wasn't a lot of good communication between the American production teams and the Japanese people they hired. And it was really obvious that whenever a decision had to be made, that they would defer to basically, it sounds like James Clavell, who is not some babe in the woods. He'd spent a lot of time in Japan, among Japanese. He hadn't actually spent a lot of time in Japan. He was a prisoner of war in Singapore. So, you know, when you're deferring to this guy who admittedly wrote the book, he wrote the book Shogun that it's based on. He did his research. He's a very smart guy. He has a lot of taste and talent. But they're deferring to a white guy about decisions about how people were dressed or how they might act, Whereas now, you know, it sounds like Hiroyuki Sanada, he's not an executive producer. He's a producer who actually has decision-making authority and would dictate the way that, you know, people would talk or dress or act or they'd be set. But this is really key. This is one thing I want to make really clear. This doesn't necessarily make 2024 Shogun more accurate. What it makes it is more from the Japanese gaze. It makes it more of a Japanese fantasy of what the Warring States era was. Because if you actually did everything like it really was back in the Warring States era, you'd have people with like blacked out teeth. Like they don't kneel or sit the way they do now. Like they had this different kind of crouch and it would look really odd to our eyes. There's all sorts of things that if you did it exactly like it was, you know, kind of like Bob Guccione did with Caligula, the most accurate portrayal of ancient Rome ever made. If you'd ever done it that way, it would be kind of like off-putting. So Sanada following conventions that the Japanese would do, which makes it like one of the most accurate Jidaigeki period dramas I've ever seen on American TV.
Sanada starred in Ninja Wars, which is, you know, pretty much like the most accurate. You know, Duke Sanada, Roaring Fire, Shiro from Message from Space, San Kyukai. I mean, he's like royalty in my eyes. I love I love Duke Sanada, okay? I love this guy. I don't know if he's right for the role of Torunaga, which is terrible because he's a great actor.
Yes.
But compared to Toshiro Mifune, I mean, Duke Sanada is like kind of a physically small guy. He's about 5'5", and he's great in action scenes. I don't know if he can fill that armor, Matt. I don't know. I don't know if he can put it.
Well, he's no Tomisaburo Wakayama, but then again, who is?
But then again, who does?
Allow me to retort one other thing. Hiroko pointed this out to me. I'll give credit where credit's due. In the 70s, if you were an Asian actor who came to the States, you had to take an American name. You like his name is Hiroyuki Sanada, but like in the 70s, he was billed as Duke Sanada, just like Shinichi Chiba is Sonny Chiba. And now he's Hiroyuki Sanada. I don't think many people remember him as Duke. You know, why do you have to take a foreign person's name? You're a Japanese person or whatever your ethnicity is.
So New Line Cinema renamed Shinichi Chiba as Sonny Chiba. And New Line Cinema also released Roaring Fire and renamed Hiroyuki Sanada Duke Sanada.
The grace of Bruce Lee. The speed of Sonny Chiba. The force of Chuck Norris. He floats like a butterfly and stings like a killer bee. See Duke Sanada, the total destroyer. Challenge the deadliest enemy of all. Duke Sanada is Roaring Fire, rated R.
Sanada was a protege of Sonny Chiba, and there was also Su Shihomi, right? Etsuko Shihomi was renamed Su Shihomi for Sister Street Fighter.
I haven't been so insulted since Bally Midway renamed Puckman Pac-Man.
Duke Sanada, Hiroyuki Sanada, he's got action in his, you know, blood and veins. And in some of the episodes so far, he's done some kind of buddy cop stuff with Blackthorn, which is right. Fun. You know, they've done some action stuff, but I don't think he's going to go full Ninja Wars. I mean, I hope he does.
No, because he wouldn't. When you were like a high-ranking daimyo, you were surrounded by warriors. You're not the guy who does the war yourself, unless you're kind of sitting out there surrounded by those pennants, like calling out orders. Like you're not the guy who's actually waging war at that point any more than like the president of the United States is rushing into the breach, you know, and firing off, you know, rounds out of his 45 when we're doing some action and wherever. The thing I really am liking about 2024 is that they're actually using Blackthorn as a almost comic relief. Not in a slapstick, you know, drifters kind of way, but he's funny. He's actually, the stuff that he does is funny in a very contextualized way. Like, I don't know, accidentally sticking his arm through a shoji screen. And it's not a joke about shoji. You know, normally it's like, oh, Japanese and their paper walls. And then like, you know, Homer Simpson walks through it. It's like showing how little he knows about Japan, that he can't even open a door without breaking it.
So can we talk about this actor a little bit? Cosmo Jones.
Is that his birth name?
I think I bought a nickel bag of weed from a guy named Cosmo Jones when I was in junior high school, so I'm glad to see his career has progressed beyond that. He looks like Aragorn in the first episode from Lord of the Rings, and then they shave him and he looks like a buff Seth Rogen.
He looks like a Tatum Channing that's been, you know, abused a little bit more. I mean, he's rough looking. He has to be. He's been punched around in the show a lot.
So his superpower is his voice. He speaks like Richard Burton. Like he's so theatrical.
Yeah.
And he has to do a lot of work at the beginning because they don't have the narrator anymore. So some of the dialogue is like,
Matthew, we have been doing the Pure Tokyo Scope podcast for almost 2 years now. And yet in that time, we have never done the Shakey's episode.
Yes. So he's playing it with like this really strong theatrical bent, which I like a lot because he kind of looks to me like Magic Mike. I think he's great. He's doing a good job.
It's very 16th century. You know, you got the guys with those kind of ruffled collars. You have the Jesuits, you have him, and they're all, you know, projecting in that very, they're not speaking in iambic pentameter, but you're right. They have that kind of projection to them. It's interesting because Cosmo, can I call you that by your first name? Cosmo and I go way back. I first knew him from a Ridley Scott produced series called Raised by Wolves, which was a short-lived, it was really awesome in its early episodes and then got really rapidly whack. But he played this kind of crazed scientist who was sending people into space. And he was good on that. But I never would have expected him to be thrown into like a role like this, a starring role like this. Doing a great job carrying it.
To be compared against Richard Chamberlain, who was, you know, a pretty great actor in the original Shogun as the original Blackthorn. So,
right.
And also, you know, Sonata's up against the shadow of Toshirô Mifune, you know, maybe the greatest Japanese actor besides Tetsuro Tamba.
I thought you were going to say Sonny Chiba, but they obviously studied the 1980s Shogun, you know, and I think they took a lot of the theatricality from it while kind of tamping down its worst excesses. You know, I'm so, so glad it doesn't have a narrator. I mean, I'm trying to think, what's the last movie or show or miniseries that we've seen that has a narrator in it? I can't even remember. It's just not even
Blade Runner.
They don't even Sushi. That's what my ex wife.
The charmer's name was Yabu. He had a samurai sword that could cut a man's head off. He liked to boil people alive and jerk off to the sounds of them dying.
So 1982. So basically you're saying that's the last time we had a Conan. Conan had that. Mad Max had it, but it was actually being told by one of the characters.
Yeah, there was a lot of narration back in the day. I'm not against narration, but yeah, they did the right thing here, although they kind of have to do what they call lappiness. They kind of always have to say,
Matthew, you and I have been at sea for 2 years now. As you know, the Portuguese are doing this and the Catholics are doing that.
The interesting thing about that, or the funny thing rather, I should say, is that, you know, I've been watching this with Hiroko, and as someone who does not have a lot of background in what the kind of religious wars of Europe were in the 16th, the 15th and 16th century, she's like, oh, Catholics and Protestants. I didn't realize this was, and I'm like, yes, that still is in many quarters a big deal. It's a lot of history to take in for people who aren't familiar with it. I guess they assumed that Westerners would be. And so when we actually sat down and watched the 1980 Shogun, which has this really heavy-handed narration, it's like, yes, the Protestants are at war and the Spaniards have sent out this ship to raid and plunder all along the Pacific. And, you know, and he actually tells the whole context that's missing from this one. And she's like, oh, now I get it. That's what it's about. So it actually helped. It just sounds kind of cheesy right now is the only problem.
I'm okay with a narrator. Orson Welles, I mean, he narrated the original trailer for Star Trek, the motion picture. So
it will startle your senses, challenge your intellect, and alter your perception of the future by taking you there. Star Trek, the motion picture, rated G.
I think one big difference between the new Blackthorn and the old one is that this new Blackthorn doesn't really resist all the cultural differences. You know, like, he just kind of rolls with it. The old Richard Chamberlain Blackthorn was like, raw fish.
Ew.
Yeah, and the new one just kind of rolls with it, which is fine. And I just feel like there's so much less resistance. I feel like the new one has to do so much less educating the viewer on what Japan is, what a bath is, what raw fish is. Like, after 40 years of pummeling our brains with Japanese content, I mean, people don't need that as much. They don't need to learn Japanese culture as much as they used to, I think.
Oh, Patrick, I believe what you're saying is 1980s Shogun walked so that 2024 Shogun could run. Is that what you're saying? It's true, though. I mean, it's somebody who's been kind of living under a rock the past couple of decades who doesn't know what sashimi is or something like that. And I think, actually, if you played those scenes in the same way now, they would, especially among younger viewers, kind of make them think that you were condescending or making fun of the of Japanese culture. When, and I'm sure they were in 1980, like, ew, raw fish. But can you imagine like how bad people were in the 80s? Can you imagine how much worse they were in like 1598? They would have just been completely, there's no sense of coexistence. There's no sense of like, you know, cultural exchanges back then, unless you have like a musket tucked into your suspenders or whatever it is. So if anything, you know, they've definitely played it down. The 2024 Blackthorn is very much a 2024 Blackthorn and not a 16, you know, or a 1598 one, but he's very much a man of our era and not one of the 1500s. But what can you do? What can you do? It's like a, it's a modern show, and I think it works great.
We're only a few episodes in. I mean, I think the real test is going to be, can they pull off the forbidden love affair between Mariko and Blackthorn in this new version?
What is the actress's name again? She's doing a great job. It almost makes me forgive her for starring in Godzilla Monarch, the legendary.
Never forgive, Matt. Never forget, never forgive.
No, I can forgive, but I will never forget. Maybe that's what
I wanted to say a few words about her. She looks so young. I think it's right. Because she has like the Hime cut, which is like kind of trendy in Japan now among young girls to have their hair cut like that. Whereas the original Mariko from 1980, Yoko Shimada, like feels much older, feels like fully developed into womanhood. She was 27 when they shot the 1980 Shogun, and the new Mariko is like 31 years old, but to me, she feels much younger.
Anna Sawai, right? Anna Sawai.
Anna Sawai. And she's also physically tiny. Anytime she's in a frame, it's like Dorf on golf. It's like she's on her knees. I don't know. I mean, I think Yoko Shimada had more presence. I don't know what to say.
Patrick, there were some things about her performance I liked and some I didn't like. No, I actually like her.
I don't want to sound like Napoleon in Time Bandits, but yeah, Sonata's kind of small. Anna Sawai, Marco's kind of small.
Not one of them under 5'6". What kind of theater are you running, huh? No, the more of the funny show, the little puppets hitting each other. That's what I like. Little things hitting each other.
Have you seen like old suits of Japanese armor? Japanese people were tiny back then. They actually were small. So it's like that. That to me feels like less of a, you know, although I've read it's in her contract that she is not taking her clothes off. Unlike the Mariko of the 1980s. I know.
Yoko Shimada
did. I, you know, and there's that whole bath scene with her and Richard Chamberlain in it. That's probably as responsible as much as anything thing for getting Americans to think that like Japanese bathing rituals are somehow sexual in nature.
Oh, and also picking up the book Making Out in Japanese.
Does Mariko hand Blackthorn a copy of Making Out in Japanese at some point in the proceedings? She's like, here, check this out.
So much of this adaptation is going to rely on that love story. That's kind of the dramatic cherry on top here.
I thought you were going to say it hinges on the ninja battles, because this is Shogun 1980 is actually one of the earlier examples of ninja being introduced into American pop culture. A pre-American ninja, Patrick. Post, however, You Only Live Twice, which is, as far as I'm aware, the very first Western movie to feature ninja in it.
And also The Killer Elite by Sam Peckinpah, which has like ninjas like attacking James Caan like on the Sacramento River.
Is that real? I was going to say Anna Sawai got her start in, I'm quoting this from the internet, James McTeague's 2009 neo-noir martial arts film Ninja Assassin. One of your favorites, I'm sure.
I missed that one. My favorite performance so far, Tadanobu Asano as Yabu. Matt, if I was casting this thing, I mean, as much as I love Duke Sonata, I would make Asano Toranaga. He's just got the presence. He's got the physicality. He's my favorite actor in this performance award so far.
No, he's great. But how much of it is it because he's your favorite actor because his role was just so well written? Like he is so great as this smarmy, venal, like asshole of a samurai. He's so, so great at it. It actually really rehabilitated my image of Asano as an actor, because in recent years I've just been seeing him playing these minor roles in crappy, you know, Marvel hero movies, and
didn't like him in Thor the Dark World,
honestly. Like his dialogue is unintelligible. Like, no offense, I know how difficult it is to speak another language, but like he's just not really great at delivering dialogue in English. And seeing him back in Japanese in this role made me realize just what an amazing and versatile actor he is. But man, please, if delivering lines in English isn't your thing, that's cool. Like, stick to Japanese, because you are amazing in this role. You were absolutely great.
I would have had him as Toranaga. I'm a big Asano fan. There used to be a wax statue of him in his Ichi the Killer mode at Tokyo Tower, at the Tokyo Tower Wax Museum. I don't know where it is now, but I'm going to drop some of those pics into Substack. And there's also a pic of me with him. We hung out one night together with Riki Takeuchi in Shibuya post-Tokyo Scope with Takashi Miike. So,
No. You can't tease. What was that like? What happened?
We rolled into this joint with Miike and everyone's like, oh, Miike. And then like half an hour later, Riki Takeuchi shows up and everyone's like, whoa, Riki Takeuchi. And then half an hour later, Asano shows up and everyone's like, whoa, Asano. And it was great. It was,
was this in Golden Guy?
It was in Shibuya. There were more stars than there were in the heavens, Matt.
Yeah, apparently. I mean, where's this, but was it Mandarake? Where were you guys drinking? Was it Mandarake after hours?
I don't know.
It was a setup. So like, did somebody like bust through the wall and start machine gunning all of you? Just set up. One of the things I like about both of these shoguns is like how many, it's like they're constantly pressing Blackthorn. Are you a Kaizoku? Are you a pirate? And he's like, no. And then like, it keeps like little bits of information come up. Well, they were like plundering and destroying like, you know, any ship or any Portuguese or Spanish thing they came across. And it's like, yeah, but you know, that wasn't like piracy.
Yeah. They make Blackthorn so sympathetic in the original. He's literally like Charlton Heston in Planet of the Apes. Like, yes, you're rooting for him just to survive. And in the new one, they are revealing how morally gray he is in this situation.
Well, and I think they make it much clearer in this version, just how much religion, Western religion, Christianity, Catholicism, Protestantism, whatever you, what have it, represented cultural imperialism back then. I think even in the 1980s version, even though they're showing all of this kind of discord between the papists and the Protestants, it's still kind of assumed that Christianity is this kind of force for good in the world. Whereas in this one, it's really obvious that like nothing is sacred. It's all about money, you know, get rich or die trying. They're like smuggling guns. They're like doing all sorts of things.
They're opening steakhouses. They're like...
They're launching toy lines. When are they going to hire us to script the Shogun Warriors prestige television show based on the Marvel comics, where you have these like four random people piloting the robots against the Fantastic Four? When, Patrick? When?
We're only two episodes in to the new Shogun. There's eight more to go. So, I mean, Shogun Mania has not yet reached its climax.
I don't want to do any spoilers, but in the last episode, they wind up in 1980, where they're filming the 1980 Shogun series. They find a time warp in a cave.
They find a hot tub time machine. The bath with Richard Chamberlain and Yoko Shimada transports them in time.
And suddenly they're on the set of the 1980, just like Galactica 80, my favorite.
Then Unicron comes out of the sky and destroys the Earth, and the Autobots have to assemble or something.
Planet
like that.
Eater, wine drinker, Unicron. Somebody has to do a supercut of this where they put Unicron's narration over the 2024 Shogun.
Enjoying the new Shogun.
Watch it.
It's a moment. Let's cash in on it while we can.
I'm making my Shogun t-shirts right now.
Do you think it will inspire a new generation to learn Japanese and come to Japan and learn the way of the sword like Mark Zuckerberg?
Somebody sent me the picture of Mark. Have you seen this, like, the sepia-toned image of Mark Zuckerberg sitting, like, wearing a male, like, hakama kimono, like, sitting in this Zen garden with his sword on his leg? Have you seen this photo?
I've seen photos of him working on a sword like Conan the Barbarian.
No. It gets better. It gets way, way... All of this, it was just a setup, Patrick, just like you and Shibuya. It was all a setup to take this photograph, this sepia-toned photograph of Mark Zuckerberg sitting there with a sword in his lap.
Doing like some Last Samurai shit.
It was sent to me by a friend who said, is this what a modern midlife crisis looks like? And it's just, it's the funniest fight. He looks like one of those replicants from the Questor tapes.
Maskatron, something like that.
He looks like Maskatron. And the best part is he has his two swords on his hip still sheathed, but he has this unsheathed sword held blade down against his leg. Like he's going to try. Like, kid, you're not going to shoot your eye out. You're going to cut your leg off. We're going to post this picture in the show notes. It's going to be mandatory material for history students in the future of something or another.
Under the heading Mighty Whitey, question mark?
He is the Mighty Whitey. He is. That's, hey, Patrick, that's a little close to being an ethnic slur, but we'll allow it here because he is the whitest guy I've ever seen. He's 100%. We shouldn't be making fun of people who have enough money to crush us like bugs. Like, he is our Toranaga. He has the power to throw us in the brig and like pour like rotten fish on us. Was it rotten fish? It was like the weirdest torture in the first episode of Shogun.
Is it torture? Were they feeding them? I don't know. I mean, Mark Zuckerberg, the day after he made his samurai sword, he went to McDonald's. So maybe like in our scenario, he would pour like, I don't know, McNuggets or something like that on us.
Liquid McNuggets. It's like, it's steel over polyalloy. I don't know what chicken McNuggets are made of anymore.
Oh no, now I have to like wash the dishes and mop the floors at the Shogun Steakhouse for penance, Matt.
Yes, you do.
The cooks are very entertaining as well as very personable.
The prices are great.
I've eaten here 14 times and it's really exciting. I love the food.
I've never been entertained and served such good food at one time.
I'm really enjoying the atmosphere here.
The other people at the table make it so much fun.
I've never eaten here before, but it is really great and I really enjoy it. It's very entertaining.
The portions are huge. You never leave hungry.
North Alabama's choice for fine Japanese cuisine, Shogun Japanese Steakhouse on University Drive.
Well, thanks for listening. Thanks for joining us in the era of warring states. Patrick and I are the two last people standing.
Matthew, as you know, it is the year 2024. Mandarake has more tourists than ever. Shakey's is but a dream of a dream. The Shogun of Harlem remains in power, and the Shogun warriors Raiden, Great Mazinger. I don't know where I'm going.
Get back to mopping floors in the Shogun Steakhouse, Patrick.
Sorry. I was hallucinating. I thought it was 1980. I thought it was 2004. I don't know.
You're like an AI hallucinating. Can we trust you anymore? Or are you?
I thought I was back in Los Angeles 2019 or something like that. I don't know.
Never fake news on Pure Tokyo Scope. It's always, this is as real as it gets. And stay tuned because I guarantee you there's another episode coming up in the very near future. Thank you for listening.
Thanks for listening. See you next time. Bye.
We'll be right back.